Our next case is Bedgear LLC versus Fredman Brothers Furniture Company, 2018-21-70. Mr. Ricchetti.
May it please the court. This case is focused on a claim construction issue of the term pillow. It's a situation here where we submit that the board applied the wrong claim construction standard. And when we go through the board's final written decision, we see consistently that the board went through the evidence trying to see if the definition or the usage of pillow was excluding non-loose foam material. And we submit that this court in In Re Smith and in In Re Power Integrations set out the proper standard. The court in those cases said the correct inquiry in giving a claim term its broadest reasonable interpretation in light of the specification is not whether the specification prescribes or precludes some broad reading of the claim term. And that's exactly what the PTAB did here. They went through the intrinsic record, which they kind of mixed up at times, but they were looking for the 408 patent, the specification, to exclude out from pillow non-loose film material. And that's not the correct approach. The correct approach would have been to try to understand what the plain and ordinary meaning of pillow is and how that term's used in the specification and the claims.
Well, in a way, that's not far perhaps from what the board did, which is to say, it looked at the word pillow, it looked at the spec, said, we can't tell very much from the spec, except that the one specifically described embodiment, the interior item, has its own cover before you put it inside the outside cover. But it describes that in language that says in some embodiments. And so what we are going to actually do is look at what the evidence, extrinsic evidence, tells us about maybe not the plain, but at least an ordinary meaning. And we think that fill material that's not loose, you know, like a foam structure that you could sleep on, rest your head on anyway, without putting a cover if you cared to, that is one reasonable. It's reasonable to say that that itself is a pillow, even if it doesn't have a cloth on it.
And Your Honor, I think you hit on a bunch of different points, right? One is the specification does say in some embodiments, pillow 24 includes a cover 54 having a first panel. But the board made very clear, and this was a dispute at the board, that that language wasn't broadening out pillow. It wasn't suggesting some embodiments can have a pillow with a cover and some embodiments could have a pillow without a cover. Rather, what the board said at Appendix 13 through 14 is that the actual spec was amended for this very language, and it was trying to differentiate between a cover with one panel versus a cover with more than one panel. And the language that was amended out basically left the language with one panel. And this is on Appendix 13 and 14. The court explained that it doesn't broaden pillow to be only fill material. Makes clear, you know, maybe a but should have been there, but makes clear that applicant intended to broaden cover 54 to include only a single panel cover. So there's no discussion in the 408 patent specification of a pillow that doesn't have a cover. Every discussion is a pillow with a cover and fill material. And so one of ordinary skill in the art would understand from that we're talking about a very traditional pillow, right? Pillows include covers and fill material within it. Now, if that was the only intrinsic evidence, right, that's the only intrinsic evidence the board recognized, right, but there was other intrinsic evidence that the board misclassified as extrinsic evidence. And this was prior art that was cited in the file history. And in Kumar, the Federal Circuit back in 2003 made this clear, that's intrinsic evidence. And that should have been considered as well. And here we have a, you know,
Was it not considered at all or just interpreted differently from the way that you interpreted?
I think the answer to that is yes and yes. So when it comes to the 134 patent...
I didn't realize that was a possibility.
Right. Well, it was both. Right? It was both. In one instance, the 134 patent was treated as extrinsic evidence, even though it's on the face of the patent. So it should have been treated as intrinsic evidence. And the 134 patent is actually a patent to the same inventor. And this same inventor in that description talks about pillows and that the pillow has a cover and fill material consistently and consistent with the 408 spec. The board did analyze that information, but of course, in the wrong bucket, right? The board was considering it as extrinsic evidence. It talked about it after it talked about definitions. So that's one mistake. It didn't give it its proper weight. That's legal error, right? It should have been included in the intrinsic evidence. But the interesting part about that is what the board said when it was going through.
And just to be clear, since accepting your view, at least by assumption, that this is part of intrinsic evidence and this is matter that we can consider on our own, so it doesn't really matter if the board misconsidered it. We need to consider it for its proper effect regardless.
We would agree that it should be given its proper weight and put in the proper category of intrinsic evidence. But what the board did say about the 134 patent and other Begier patents that were extrinsic, it said, and this is, it says it indicates that the pillow claimed in those patents, the 134 being one of them, requires fill material and a cover containing fill material. And this is important because it demonstrates that the board recognized what the 134 patent taught to one of ordinary skill in the art. But because the board was applying the wrong standard, it discarded this reference because it found it to be a non-limiting example of pillow. So because it used the word typically or usually in the specification, it said that doesn't preclude it. And that's not the right analysis. It was supposed to be looking to see what one of ordinary skill in the art at the time this application was filed would have understood a pillow to be. And that's consistently in the 408 patent specification and the written description would have been, as well as the 134 patent, would have been a pillow that included a cover and fill material. But to go to your other point, Your Honor, the Fry reference, which is one of the references in the ground, is also intrinsic evidence in this case. And the Fry reference is has really great language in explaining what a pillow is. And at Appendix 805, it says, bed pillows are usually constructed of a fabric covering and a filler of either synthetic fiberfill, down feathers, latex foam, or viscoelastic foam. Inside the cover creates a pillow. Creates a pillow. Fry is telling us what creates a pillow is when the foam is put inside the covering of it. Fry goes on to talk about the pillow 100 is constructed by sewing two pieces of fabric together around the circumference of the fabric, allowing an opening for the filling, the resulting cover with filling material. So Fry, the very reference they're relying on, is intrinsic evidence. And it makes clear a couple different things, that there's the pillow and the fill material are two different things. And they're used exclusively and consistently as two different things. That a pillow is created by placing the fill material inside the cover, and that foam is fill material, not a pillow. Now, again, the board threw this reference in the extrinsic evidence bucket, and that was improper and incorrect. But I think what's more egregious here is that the board failed to analyze this piece of information. And that goes to the second part, Your Honor, of your question, which was here the board didn't analyze. You know, it talked about our arguments about it, but it didn't analyze the Fry reference. It didn't analyze those statements. So not only did it not analyze it in the context of intrinsic evidence to determine what one of ordinary skill in the art would have understood a pillow to be, it didn't analyze it at all. Now, in its brief, Fredman Brothers at page 23 insinuates that the board would have discarded all these disclosures in Fry for the same reasons as the 134 patent. But the important part is the board never did that. The board didn't go through that analysis. So what we have is a record in which one of the most important pieces of intrinsic record was left unanalyzed. Now, when we look at what the board did rely on, it relied on a dictionary definition. a second definition in a reference in a dictionary that or a reference submitted by Begier, but a definition that neither party relied on, neither expert testified about, and there's no surrounding understanding of what one of ordinary skill in the art would have understood that definition to mean. And the definition only says any pillow-shaped block or support. So as the court was going through this, what did the court say about this at Appendix 15? It says, we note that the only definition in the record that relates to fill material that is not loose is Exhibit 2003's any pillow-shaped block or support. And then the board comments that that, which is also consistent with the petitioner's interpretation. But again, the board's going through all the evidence. There was other dictionary definitions, and they all required a cover and fill. But the board was looking exclusively for non-loose fill material to see if somehow pillows have excluded that from ever being considered. And that's just fundamentally the wrong approach. It's wrong as a matter of law, and it infected the entire analysis the board provided. Now, you know, again, the board can consider extrinsic evidence. Absolutely, we don't object to that. But the board can't rely on it when it's inconsistent or contradicts the intrinsic record. And that's well settled. That's bedrock principle. And the Federal Circuit has made that clear over and over again. So when we look at how the board did this and how it infected the analysis, it infected how the board looked at the evidence. There was unfortunate mistakes about which evidence fell in which bucket. But it also leads to certain kind of absurd results, one being that the pillow, the definition of pillow changes based on the fill. And that's unusual, right? A pillow has a meaning to one of ordinary skill in the art. It's the components of it. And I think, you know, Your Honor, your last point was about resting your head. That's the function of a pillow, right? That's what we do with a pillow. But it's not what a pillow is, right? And I think there was testimony for sure in the record about their, you know, Fredman Brothers expert said, well, a puppy could be a pillow because you could rest your head on a puppy. I'm not suggesting that's appropriate. You could rest your head on a rock. You could rest your head on whatever. But that doesn't make it a pillow because it serves the function of something we can rest our head on. I could rest my head on my arm. That doesn't make my arm a pillow. A pillow had a well and established and understood meaning. The record, intrinsic record, makes it incredibly clear that it's a pillow that includes a cover and fill. The intrinsic record was clear. I don't believe extrinsic evidence needed to be resorted to. But even if it is, it doesn't, it's not permitted to contradict the intrinsic.
You're into your rebuttal time, and perhaps you ought to rest. And we'll hear from...
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Mudd.
May it please the court. Jason Mudd for Appellee Fredman Brothers Furniture. The board correctly found that claim 12 of the 408 patent would have been obvious over Fry in view of Shelby. The purported invention here was directed to a pillow cover having an opening in one panel that's covered by both a porous patch and a filter so as to allow for airflow while at the same time preventing the entry of contaminants such as dirt and oil. Now, importantly, Begier does not dispute that any of these purported inventive features, and indeed that all the limitations of Claim 12 are taught by Fry and View of Shelby, except for one claim term, pillow. And their argument for why it does not teach a pillow is based on an improper narrowing claim construction that seeks to limit the claim term pillow to being just a, quote, standard pillow, having at least its own fabric cover and fill material contained therein. Begier's proposed construction is telling because their own construction recites that the claimed pillow should be a standard pillow that has its own fabric cover. So its own construction tacitly admits that it's a standard pillow that would have its own fabric cover and that there could be other presumably non-standard pillows in Begier's view that would not have their own cover, such as solid memory foam. So it's very clear that Begier's construction is seeking to read in limitations into the claim language. Now, importantly, the standard that's being applied here is the broadest reasonable interpretation, we're not applying Phillips because this IPR was handled before the Patent Office changed its rules to adopt the Phillips standard. Now, importantly, the intrinsic evidence here does not support Bedgear's construction to seek to inject this requirement of a standard pillow that has its own cover. And importantly, as we've noted in the briefing, what this construction is doing, as the board noted, is it's trying to require the claim language, which already recites a pillow cover, it's trying to inject a requirement that there are two covers, even though the plain claim language only recites a single pillow cover. Now, as we noted in the briefing, Bedgear could have expressly recited in the claims that the pillow comprises its own pillow cover, but they didn't do that. Bedgear could have acted as its own lexicographer. If the term pillow had such great importance to the invention, they could have defined the term pillow and saying it specifically is limited to a so-called standard pillow having its own cover, but Bedgear did not do that. Bedgear could have also, in describing the pillow in the specification, always described it as having its own cover, but it did not do that. Therefore, it's inappropriate to read in a limitation that's not present in the claim language. And importantly, even the specification itself doesn't describe the pillow as being a, quote, standard pillow or a conventional pillow. And as the board expressly found, Bedgear's proposed construction was not consistent with the specification. So Bedgear had primarily relied on Figure 3 of the 408 patent and the description of it, which refers to a pillow 24 having a cover 54. It's this essentially this cover 54 that Bedgear is trying to read into the claim language. But importantly, what the specification says at column 5, lines 49 to 51, is that in some embodiments, pillow 24 includes a cover 54. So it's saying in some embodiments it has this cover. Now, importantly, that sentence continues. It says in some embodiments, pillow 24 includes a cover 54 having a first panel 56. Now, in the proceedings below, Bedgear had argued, well, that could mean it's just saying in some embodiments the cover 54 has a first panel, so as to suggest that there are other embodiments that where the cover 54 has two panels. And importantly, the board addressed this issue, and I don't believe Bedgear is continuing to urge this issue, but what the board noted is that during prosecution, the specification was actually expressly amended to exclude any embodiment where cover 54 has two panels. So the only cover 54 that's ever described in the patent is a cover 54 that has one panel. So that makes clear then that sentence means that in some embodiments, pillow 24 includes a cover 54. There is no embodiments where you have a two-paneled cover 54. It's just one cover 54 that's described. And it makes clear that that's present in some embodiments. And importantly, the board went on to note in its decision that even pillow 24 itself is just an example in the patent. So the patent states at column 3, lines 8 to 9, that a pillow such as, for example, pillow 24 of system 10. So even pillow 24, even if we assumed that every embodiment of pillow 24 was described as having its own cover 54, even if that were the case, it would still be improper to limit the claim pillow to that, because the patent makes clear that pillow 24 itself is just exemplary. It's just an embodiment. And the board expressly noted that in its decision. And importantly, Bedgear's expert testified that the 408 patent can be used with any pillow. It's not restricted. And he agreed that pillow 24 is just an example that's described in the specification. And it's black letter law that it's improper to try to read limitations in from embodiments in the specification into the claim language. Now, turning next to the 134 patent and the Frye reference. Now, counsel for Bedgear has argued that the board committed error here by bucketing this supposedly very important evidence as being extrinsic evidence rather than intrinsic evidence. Importantly, there's nothing in the board's decision that suggests it was somehow discounting the 134 patent or the Frye reference as being extrinsic evidence and therefore we're giving it less weight. They didn't do that. All Bedgear can say is that, well, the headings list the 134 patent and Fry references under a subheading that's titled extrinsic evidence. That's all that happened. There's nothing in the decision that says we discount this evidence. In any event, it doesn't matter because the board found that the 134 patent and Fry actually don't support Bedgear's construction. Because what the 134 patent specification says is that the use of a pillow made typically of a fabric cover stuffed with compliant soft material is known in the prior art. So the 134 patent itself admits that it is typically a pillow, it has a fabric cover with fill material, which demonstrates that the same inventor in a piece of intrinsic evidence, a cited reference, had said that typically pillows have their own fabric cover, not that they always have them or require them. The same thing applies for the Fry reference. The Fry reference states that pillows are usually constructed of a fabric covering and fill material. Again, they usually are. They are not always constructed in this manner, and they're not required to be constructed in that manner. So even if the board somehow misclassified the 134 patent and Fry as extrinsic evidence, which we don't believe they did, but even if they did, they didn't purport to discount it, and this evidence actually demonstrates that Bedgear's construction is improper. So if anything, if we were to classify it as intrinsic evidence, it elevates the importance of this evidence, which demonstrates that Bedgear's construction is improper. Next, the board thoroughly weighed and considered the party's extrinsic evidence. And as we noted in the briefing, this weighing of evidence by the board is entitled to deference. As this court confirmed in the SAS opinion applying the U.S. Supreme Court's Teva decision, the board's weighing of extrinsic evidence and claim construction is reviewed for substantial evidence. So here, this isn't an opportunity on appeal for Bedgear to go in and ask this court to reweigh the extrinsic evidence. The board here has weighed that, and there is certainly more than reasonable evidence that allowed the board to reach its conclusion with regard to the extrinsic evidence. Starting first with the dictionary definitions. Bedgear has raised issue with the fact that a piece of evidence that they themselves submitted, a dictionary definition which included a definition of any pillow-shaped block or support, they take issue with the board relying on a piece of evidence that they themselves submitted. There's nothing improper about doing that. They certainly invited the board to consider that definition because they provided it to the board. Whether Bedgear argued it or not is irrelevant. It's evidence they provided. And importantly, even amongst these definitions, we again see the word usually. Right? Usually, a fabric cover is stuffed with soft material for a pillow. Usually. And importantly, the expert testimony here, including the testimony of Bedgear's own expert, I think is some of the most persuasive evidence the board considered. Bedgear's expert incredibly testified that solid memory foam in a cover would be understood to be a pillow. But when you remove that cover, it all of a sudden ceases to be a pillow because you've taken the cover off. And when asked why is the memory foam no longer a pillow when you take the cover off, he testified, well, it can absorb moisture and contaminants, and this would cause deficiencies. Well, that may make it a dirty pillow, but it's still a pillow at that point. And as the board expressly found, the record, quote, does not indicate why solid memory foam, even if it can absorb undesirable substances, fails to benefit from the advantages of cover 12 of the 408 patent or be a block or support. And as we noted in the briefing, indeed, a piece of solid memory foam that did not have its own fabric cover would benefit even more so from the invention, right? A cover that has a opening for air to go in and out, but has a porous patch and a filter to keep contaminants from going in, a piece of memory foam that doesn't have its own cover benefits even more. If the memory foam already has its own intrinsic cover inside of the pillow cover, in other words, two covers, it really needs the invention much less because it already has its own intrinsic cover. So as the board noted, the fact that a piece of solid memory foam can become dirty without its own cover does not in any way demonstrate that it is not a pillow. As the board noted, the key aspects of the 408 were preventing staining while also allowing cooling and allowing the pillow to be removed. And the board concluded, this is at Appendix 12 to 13, that a pillow comprised of solid foam would enjoy all of those benefits. So there's no reason why that cannot be considered to be a pillow. Next, I don't believe Bedgear really addressed it in its opening argument, but in the briefing, Bedgear had argued that there was potentially some, that the board's decision was not expressly clear that it was finding that Fry taught solid foam. The board's decision is sufficiently clear on that point because it concludes that its claim construction encompasses solid foam material, and it proceeds to then find that Fry teaches that solid foam material. Fry discloses the use of viscoelastic foam, also known as memory foam, and latex foam. And as our expert opined, this forms a pillow that deforms when a person lays their head on it and rebounds when the person removes their head. So the board necessarily expressly found that the Fry reference taught solid foam fill material and satisfied the board's construction. There are a couple of other arguments that Bedgear's counsel didn't raise on appeal. I don't see a need to address. There was an argument about an APA violation that supposedly they were not on sufficient notice regarding the board's ultimate construction of the term pillow. We've laid this out in detail in the briefing. The construction of the term pillow was at issue all the way back in the patent owner's preliminary response, in the institution decision. The board made it clear that the claimed pillow did not require its own cover. This was heavily litigated throughout the course of the proceeding. Bedgear had made arguments about loose fill material not itself constituting a pillow, so Bedgear was fully on notice that the construction of the term pillow was at issue and that there was a dispute over whether there was a dispute regarding solid versus loose fill material. And finally, I'll just note very briefly, there was a reference to an appointments clause constitutional challenge. We contend Bedgear waived this argument by, one, not presenting it below in the IPR proceedings, and second, by not providing any substantive argument in its opening brief and instead just purporting to preserve such a challenge without actually raising it, and that is waived pursuant to this court's opinion in Smith-Kline Beecham. There was a couple points that appellant's counsel had raised. One was with regard to In re Smith, and all I had to say about In re Smith is that there the specification had repeatedly distinguished between a body and a mandrel, and therefore it was unreasonable to construe a body as encompassing a mandrel. There's no such repeated use of the term pillow in the specification that would make this case analogous to In re Smith.
Counsel, your red light is on. I think we have your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. We request that the board's decision be affirmed.
Right, I understand. Mr. Ricchetti has a little rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Starting with the Fry reference having solid foam, and we disagree with that, and I think I'm sure the panel's looked at the decision, and it's clear that the board did not make that finding, but just restated its claim construction holding. But if it did, then that means that Fry disclosed the solid foam as fill material and not a pillow. So the very reference, the examiner saying has a pillow, is relying on something that the reference calls something completely different, fill material, consistently calls it fill material. We believe that's an issue and an error in the decision, but to be honest, the decision doesn't go that far. It never says Fry has a solid block of foam. But now, going back to everything we've heard, we never heard what's the plain and ordinary meaning. We heard usually, typically, these are somehow now bad words. They're actually words that evidence what one of ordinary skill in the art would understand the term to mean. Usually, a pillow includes fabric cover and fill. That's the plain and ordinary meaning.
There's a district court from the Northern District of California that we cited to. The Federal Circuit hasn't addressed this issue, but we submit that when those words are used, they are evidence of what the plain and ordinary meaning is, and they shouldn't be used against a patent owner as non-limiting examples. And this really goes to what In re Smith, the court said in In re Smith. It said, following the logic that counsel is proposing and the board employed, any description short of an express definition or a disclaimer in the specification would result in an adoption of the broadest possible interpretation of a claim term. That's not the, it's a broadest reasonable interpretation in light of the specification. And we submit that was not done here. We got the broadest possible, but we didn't get the broadest reasonable. And I think just the last point, you know, to this issue is just that counsel says that a pillow doesn't have to include, right, because there's no express disclaimer or limiting out non-loose filler. But by that same logic, then pillow means nothing. Because in the same way it doesn't say it can't, it has to have a cover, it must have a, right, it's defined to have a cover, always has a cover, it doesn't say anything about the fill material either, right? It just lays out how it's using the term. And that's how one of ordinary skill in the art would understand how the term is being used by the inventor. We appreciate your time, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. I could say we will sleep on it. We'll consider your arguments and the case is submitted.